Welcome one and all once again to Dual Worlds in episode 140. This week we are joined by Martin.
Hello.
And Daniel.
Guten Tag.
Guten Tag indeed. So apparently this whole Retro Worlds thing is just not going to happen anytime soon. I said if there was a quiet week of news, and I think even like this past Monday would have been a podcast alone, and then the other 6 days of the week happened. So there's a ton to talk about.
Pre-season.
But the issue we have with the pre-season is that there is a quiet time. Because
Not this year,
but there should be a quiet time, because if you're announcing all this stuff now, what do you announce in 5 weeks?
Well, it's not all game announcements, though.
Oh, it's not all game announcements, and as always, it's not all good.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll start off with the quote-unquote big one of the week. Which, I should say the second big one of the week. We're not going to talk about the first big one of the week because we don't really deal in rumors, even though I'm pretty sure it's all but confirmed at this point with Project Beast.
We talk about Project Beast. I want to talk about Project Beast, so we will talk about Project Beast.
But we don't do rumors.
At this point, it's in the rumors, so...
It's not officially confirmed. It could still be all faked.
Oh, come on.
You never know.
Plus the hints of a Sony employee. Come on now.
You never know. But the other big one, which was... I really felt bad for Game Informer this week, was Call of Duty Advanced Warfare.
Yeah.
Which I keep on getting confused with Advanced Warfighter, which is way too similar a name. It's a good thing nobody plays Ghost Recon.
And as I said earlier this week, that Combat Evolved is a much better subtitle.
Well, I don't think they want to take Combat Evolved either.
I'm actually also confused with Advanced Warfighter because I played...
Wait, are you telling me that it's not confusing with all these games called Warface and Warframe and Warfighter and Advanced Warfighter and Advanced Warfare and Modern Warfare?
Well, I mean, it makes sense for Modern Warfare that if you're going in the future, it becomes Advanced Warfare. But yes, I do think that I think the whole war whatever is just a really generic naming scheme now. Like you mentioned, Warfighter.
Well, the thing is, though, is these are generic games. Let's face it.
You don't have to scream that you're generic.
Well, no, you don't. But like, you may as well like tell people so they know what they're getting into. And you know what, if they buy those games, unless, you know, that's their problem.
Well, people know what they're getting into usually with Call of Duty, though you'd be
surprised. Oh, no! No! See, this is where you're wrong, Earl. see, if you watch the trailer, you can see that this game is going to be completely different. I mean, has there been a Call of Duty game with Kevin Spacey in it before? No.
And exactly. I am so disappointed in people that is what pushes them over the edge, is that we get a high...
It infuriated me when I saw people like, oh, this is Kevin Spacey and I'm going to buy this. Why? He's probably in it for like 5 minutes.
He's not even a playable character. He's just fat.
That as well.
No, he's in the game and that means it's completely different. It's the new era for Call of Duty. They even said so themselves.
Yes, but as you pointed out on Twitter, like, it's not the first time we've had a celebrity actor in the Call of Duty franchise.
Nope.
No, but it's the first time we've had Kevin Spacey. It doesn't matter.
Which, I like Kevin Spacey. I'm sure a lot of people are kind of high on him because of House of Cards right now. But he doesn't have a spotless record. He did do Superman Returns.
Some people might argue he's the best part of Superman Returns.
And you know what? I was going to quote Kevin Spacey because I do love when he says, come on, let me hear it. And then he goes, wrong!
And that's why it's the best part of that film.
But he is the best part of that film, but that is really saying that you are the best part of being sick.
Yep.
Real talk, though. I think that, like, the trailer was cool. I like the kind of, I like the character that Kevin Spacey has. Just... It's a fucking Call of Duty game, and you can't fucking do anything to get me interested in a game with a Call of Duty slaps on the box anymore. Like, you can tell me it's going to be a new era of the game, but you need to fucking show us that, not fucking...
Well, didn't you see they have, like, motorbikes now, and or hovercrafts or
whatever.
Oh, so... And those are totally different from snowmobiles and motorcycles.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's futuristic. It's like half-ass in Titanfall. It's like, we're going to make it more fancy, but not too fancy.
I thought the trailer also was kind of cool, and there was some aspects that I thought was interesting. I mean, the exoskeleton stuff looks like they have, like, this wall climbing stuff and these super jumps. But at the same time, I was, like, thinking, if those are just scripted events in single player, then it really doesn't matter. And it's just, like, a moment in this level where it's, like, press A to jump over this part. And that's uninteresting. If they actually go all the way, though, and make this part of multiplayer and give you actually more mobility, then it could at least be somewhat more interesting. But who knows?
Who knows, indeed. And that is why I am so... I don't want to come off as negative. If you like Call of Duty, that's your prerogative. But the people who are just kind of like, I've been tired of Call of Duty, and all of a sudden this comes out, and it's like, yeah, and I'm like... Yeah, the only thing they've done is it's prettier. Like, it's the, you know, like,
oh, yeah.
This isn't that.
As someone who is
Ghost.
As someone who's played the PS4 demo of Call of Duty Ghost this week, this is way prettier.
Yeah. So I mean, yes, you get that. You get Kevin Spacey because, you know, Hollywood actor in a video game means good things because these Hollywood actors don't take roles for a paycheck. We know that, right, Samuel?
And there has
Jackson?
Never been a bad video game with a Hollywood actor in it ever.
Ever. So the fact
remember
that
when the guy from Avatar was in Call of Duty, whose name I've already forgotten.
Gary Oldman was in Call of Duty.
Yeah, Jake Paul was. Call of
Duty. I mean, they're not Hollywood actors, but they're famous, I guess.
Kiefer Sutherland was in Call of Duty. So, and he's also a Metal Gear, just to rub that into people's nose a bit more.
No, it's David Hayter doing 24 now. That's how it is.
He's no Jack. But, yeah, so it's, I mean, again, not hating on people, it's just really funny what constitutes a new experience for some people. A shiny coat of paint and a Hollywood actor is what gets people excited, and you wonder why they don't have to change the core gameplay too much.
Yeah. I thought the portable wall thing also looked interesting.
Oh,
there was like a moment where they put out like, which looked like, I don't know what it's supposed to be, like a Kevlar wall or something, so they could have cover on the door.
I just really hope they have some new fucking gameplay paradigm in it like that, because, you know, like I said before in this podcast, after playing the Titanfall beta, I went to play Call of Duty Ghosts, and Call of Duty Ghosts felt like it was a 10-year-old game.
Yeah, that was my impression as well. I played the demo and was like, yeah, that's why I no longer play Call of Duty.
Yeah.
But that's what I mean, though. They had these cool moments in this trailer, but who knows if those are just scripted moments of the campaign. If they are, then it's
a waste
basically
of opportunity.
Nothing.
Yeah.
If they do something with it and also put these opportunities into multiplayer, then they could have something interesting.
I'm sure they'll still have something interesting. And also, I guess, contrary to some... Because it was a huge week for this game. It was kind of... It was announced, and then it was kind of teased, and then it was leaked, and then it kind of came out. But yes, it's also a cross-gen title as well. It's just next-gen first, or current-gen first, or whatever.
The way it should have been anyway.
Well, yeah, some people, you know, like Assassin's Creed is going current-gen only. Well, at least for one of the versions. So people thought that... Might have been the case of Call of Duty, but no, it's cross-gen. It's just and again, speaking about E3 down the road, it's weird that they announced that it's going to have exclusive DLC for Microsoft consoles already.
Do they need to announce that though? That's the thing.
Well, I mean, the contract. I think that contract expired, so I think it's on a year.
No,
year
the
basis.
Contract is still, I think, until 2016.
I thought it finished in
2012.
Okay.
I don't know. It doesn't matter. Like, when the contract is wiped, really. It doesn't.
They probably renewed the contract anyway.
Yeah, as long as Microsoft shoves money in their pockets, they're going to stop it.
Yeah, which is why I think...
Now is more when Microsoft needs to be putting that money in their pockets more than ever, because the Xbox One has slipped compared to PS4, so...
Yeah, and I know people are, you know, PS4 is still doing well, but I believe Call of Duty still sold best in the 360 last year.
I'm not sure about that.
I think it still sells better than any version of the game, even right now. I could be mistaken, but I believe it still sells best, even like last month of MPDs on the 360. But yeah.
I would have to double check that.
It's a huge brand. So yeah, there's that. And in other Call of Duty related news, because let's be honest, we all kind of assumed this was a thing anyhow. They announced that, well, they didn't announce, I think Giant Bomb broke that, Infinity Ward has merged with Neversoft.
Mm-hmm.
And
You know what? It surprises me that Activision kept so many, like, studios apart working on Call of Duty for this long. Like, surely it makes more sense to put all your people together, regardless of how many there are.
Especially Infinity Ward, which was basically in shambles for years.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, also showed in the games they made.
Yeah. Yeah, but, yeah, it's just one of those things, again, where they're doubling down on Call of Duty's success. I understand that they had Neversoft already working on Call of Duty DLC, and I think they helped with, not Ghost, but the one before, or did they help with Ghost? Whichever one they helped with.
They helped, I think, with Modern Warfare 3 and with Ghosts.
Okay, but even still, it's just like, you should leave them as a side thing, just helping on. Because right now, Activision has two brands. They have Skylanders and they have Call of Duty.
And they have Destiny.
Well,
they can't really mess too much with that. That's the thing.
Yeah, they don't control it. Like, it's not like they can force Bungie to do it.
And people like to forget that they actually own Blizzard.
Oh yeah, that's true. But again, they're also not people who they can do DLC, but they have... Like, basically, their money from year to year comes from these new games, from Call of Duty and Skylanders. And if one goes belly up, they are in a rough position. Not only that, but they have so many studios invested in these that it's going to be really hard for them to be flexible if that happens, where they can say, okay, you can try making this, you can try making that. Because it's not even like it's two different studios anymore. It's now one. They've merged together. So... Yep. It's really, I mean, again, you know, if Call of Duty continues to be a success, this is great for them. Why waste resources on games that don't sell nearly as well? But it's the assumption that Call of Duty continues to sell as strongly as it has, and the last 2 years of new games have shown that they're on a slight decline. They still do remarkably well, but it is a downward slope right now.
Yeah.
So I guess while we're sticking with company baggage, John Carmack and Zenimax or id Software.
It's Software.
There we go. So apparently they are suing under the assumption that he took technology that he created while working for them to implant into Oculus Rift.
Well, they might actually have a case here.
And this is actually kind of a problem more to do with like how the industry works in general, because I know that while you're working at a big company, they don't like you doing your own projects off on the side, and they make you sign contracts often to say, you know, if you do anything yourself in your spare time, we own that. And this is kind of sad, because obviously the Oculus stuff is a pet project that he loves doing, Carmack that is, and if he did write some code for it, you know, ZeniMax might actually have a claim to it.
Yeah, I feel like it's such a gray area, because like it could be like something he earned while there, but that doesn't necessarily mean it was something he developed while he was working with them.
Well, if he did it while in their offices,
yeah,
then ZeniMax has a case in this case, and.
Yeah.
And I agree with Daniel, it's actually more a problem of how these copyright things with code works these days.
Well, it's partially that, but it's also partially, I assume, what he signs as an employee for the company. Because, yeah, there are companies that say anything you do in our building or anything you do with our technology is ours, even if you leave and you have some type of breakthrough. So it's a really big crapshoot. Of course, it also is kind of funny that they decided to do this after the company was bought out for $2 billion.
Well, apparently they already had problems before, and they tried to get something done beforehand. There was like talk about ZeniMax maybe getting stakes in Oculus or other things, but they couldn't find a satisfying solution. That were the words of ZeniMax, at least.
I think it's especially interesting that they strike now, because Carmack could just say, hey, look, Mark, you know, he probably doesn't speak to Mark Zuckerberg personally, but Palmer Luckey could pull some strings within Facebook. And Facebook is a company that has a lot of money, and they have a lot of money that they could spend on lawyers. So if they really wanted to, Facebook could put a hell of a lot of fight up against ZeniMax for this.
Yeah, the problem is, well, I guess it's more on ZeniMax than Facebook, is like, how much is this fight really worth? And if you draw it out, like, it does cast a shadow over your product, and it might just be that, like, you know, if it's some type of legal battle that they can't release their product because it's doing litigation and stuff like that. So, like, do you risk, like, yeah, they might be able to afford lawyers, but can they afford the time and trial that it would take to clear this up, while their product can't be sold to the public or something like that, or they can't test it, or they can't, you know, because you don't know if you're going to have to take it back to stage one and start over again, or remove all of his code and all this other stuff.
Well, I don't think it, when it comes to, I think ZeniMax just has things to lose here. I mean, they don't, Facebook is such a big company that they could probably, even if they were made to start from scratch, they would just do it.
Yeah, but I mean, no company wants to waste that money. Like, it is money. Like, they are a very well-off company, but again, you don't know. Like, I mean, even the Oculus Rift has been in development, what, 2 or 3 years?
Yeah.
Yeah, so do you want to start that process again? We'll see how it works out. It's just been an interesting thing, especially being that a lot of it has taken place over Twitter, with John Carmack defending himself.
Yeah.
Well, did he defend himself? It kind of sounded like...
kind of brushed it aside and said that didn't happen. That's all.
I thought he also said something about, like, any tech, like, they didn't patent any technology he made or something like that.
I don't know.
It is what it is. And I guess while we're talking the business side, From Software was acquired by...
Kurokawa.
There we go. I actually have no idea who they are.
I heard it was a bad move.
They actually do a lot of things. It's a pretty old company. They like publish books. They publish games. They do all kinds of stuff. They are actually pretty big company. The only thing that people don't like about them, when you look at what kind of games they publish, most of them are kind of crap, and that's why people have been kind of worried about From Software being acquired by them.
Oh, right.
Oh, but it could just be a case of them wanting to get into console space. They found a cheap development studio that already has a rather great reputation with gamers that they can leverage as a brand. Like, I can't imagine that they're going to say, okay, you know what, we bought you, we're going to scrap all your work, and you're going to start working on mobile games for us.
Yeah.
If anything, I imagine that maybe some cross-media projects, because I assume they own some type of IPs.
Yeah, I think they also own some manga IPs and stuff like that.
Yeah, so I could probably see them getting to work on that stuff, but I can't imagine them saying that we bought you just to... okay, you know what, never mind, EA does this all the time. So, yes,
While we're with props, let's quickly talk about Project Beast. Come on.
You can talk about Project Beast.
It's basically confirmed that From Software is working on something called Project Beast. A pretty well-known Sony employee has been teasing this game actually for a while on NeoGAF, and... we now have like some screenshots from what looks like a trailer. This game was apparently supposed to be revealed at last TGS, but didn't. So I would suspect maybe they will do it this E3. And it would be the game that Miyazaki is directing, who was the game director for Demon's Souls and the first Dark Souls. A lot of the senior staff that worked on Demon's Souls and Dark Souls moved on to this project. So from that perspective, it's already pretty interesting. And from the looks of it, it seems a bit less fantasy and more like... I mean, it's still fantasy. There are, like, undead dogs and stuff like that in it, but it seems a bit more Victorian influence, I would say.
That's
and apparently
cool.
The character also uses a shotgun and a sword. So, yeah. Interesting stuff.
Also, it would make sense, because I know a lot of people that have said that Dark Souls 2 feels like it was made by, like, a B-team.
Yeah. As well, it's still a good game, don't get me wrong, but yeah, that's what I've also heard. And, of course, this game would be in development in association with Sony Japan, so it would be an exclusive title for the PlayStation 4.
Yeah. Which they kind of need. I think this would be set up for this year, but who knows. I guess it depends on how Sony... Because if it was supposed to be announced at TGS last year,
yeah.
I can imagine it has to be far young enough in development.
If they started work after the first Dark Souls on this, which I guess we can assume, first Dark Souls came out in 2011, so they might have been working on it already for more than 2 years. So maybe end of the year, early next year... Could be.
I think early next year makes more sense, because it's not a fall game in that it will get lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah. Along the same notes of Sony announcing games, they announced something like a dozen indie games this week.
Oh, yeah.
Some
of them pretty cool.
I think most of them are pretty cool.
Some are ports, if you've
yeah,
already
some of them
played
are, yeah.
them. On another platform, then it's not that interesting. Like, for example, yeah, Spelunky also coming to PlayStation 4. I mean, it's a great game, but I already played Spelunky.
Yes. I will say some of these Metroidvania games are already getting up there with just being like Metroid with a different main character.
Chasm is really good. I have... Chasm is a game that I have actually kickstarted. That's how good that game is going to be. Because it's like a Metroidvania, but it's got like a more heavy RPG slant to it. So it's like
interesting.
Isn't that the Vania part of the Metroidvania?
Well, I'm like RPG instead, like where you have like equipment and like vendors and stuff. So often you'll buy.
That's also Castlevania.
Yeah, it's kind of more like Castlevania then. Okay, than it is. All right, shut up. The pixel art is
so you could say it's more like Symphony of the Night.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where the Metroidvania stuff comes from.
Yeah. The pixel art is so good. Whenever I talk about games having ugly pixel art, this is the game that I point to and say, this is how you do pixel art properly, because it just looks so beautiful. So
my favorite though was Axiom Verge. I think that game looks great.
Yes, that has also great spirits works.
Yeah.
It kind of looks like a 16-bit game that would have grown up.
Yeah.
Some interesting one. And as always, some fantastic reactions, because I understand the viewpoint, but it always just drives me nuts when people say I didn't spend $400 to play a mobile game.
The worst one is the reactions to Nidhogg. Been on PS4?
Yeah.
And people are like, this game looks like it's supposed to be on Atari 2600.
That's kind of the point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People don't get the difference sometimes between wanting to have a specific style and not being able to do a specific style. I'm sure they could make Nidhogg in 3D, but they didn't want to.
I think part of it, though, is also kind of, like, after a while, like, it was novel at first, but since so many games use a retro art style, it's kind of, like, yeah, we've been here. But to your point, this is, you know, like, nobody goes for Atari 2600 graphics anymore.
Yeah.
But it is novel, and it does it in a, you know, not only are the characters, it also does some really interesting things with the background as far as making it kind of pop. But yeah, it's just, I mean, it's going to be a hard fact for some people to swallow, but at this point, indie games are going to be the bulk of these console signups. We're going to get those major games, but they aren't going to be as numerous as they were in previous generations because of stuff like we saw earlier with Neversoft and Infinity Wars, where studios are merging or closing down. There just aren't as many games in the
book. That's where the industry has been going. Less AAA games. And basically, the B-tier games, they basically don't no longer exist. Stuff like Wheelman does no longer exist. That's why companies like Midway also no longer exist.
And THQ.
The B-tier is gone, so what do you do? That new void is basically filled with indie games. And I think they're actually better filler than those B-tier games, because usually they are quicker produced and more focused. And usually cheaper.
And they make profit.
B-tier basically died because people didn't want to pay $60 for Wheelman.
Yeah. that was a price. That was from a pricing convention. But we've had that discussion numerous times on the show. And I guess kind of to get the opposite end of the same reaction is how people reacted to Stealth Inc. 2 being announced for an exclusive Wii U title.
That's just a weird... That is weird, like...
I just thought it was a weird business move.
Why would you make a game Wii U exclusive if you're not Nintendo?
I don't mind the Wii U exclusive. I agree it's weird in the sense that, unlike Bayonetta, where Bayonetta didn't find an audience with the PS3 and 360 fans, so that it's like Nintendo's funding it, and maybe it'll find an audience with, you know, maybe it probably won't. This game found an audience with the PlayStation fans.
Yeah.
And then
also
you just
on
decide,
PC.
Yeah, so you just decide to move it over, and it's a really weird business move. Like, their business logic kind of makes sense. Like, we wanted to, you know, there aren't a ton of indies, we wanted to test the waters. But they've developed for Nintendo before, they've developed for Nintendo specifically before, and they could have gone and said, like, we wanted to try again with Fluidity, or we wanted to try a new brand on this, or something.
And
like
it
that.
Was kind of interesting that they mentioned in the announcement that it was, that the eShop is an empty store or something like that. And I was like, ouch, that's, you don't say that, like, even if it's true, you know?
Well, they don't mean it, well, I mean, it's not empty. I mean, it's the same thing when people say the console has no games, but, there are 100 games being announced for PS4.
Yeah.
And it makes sense.
That I kind of get, but on the other hand, it's also always a question of how many consoles are out there.
Well, I mean, they supported
what
the
is
Vita,
your potential
and it's not
out,
that much better.
What is your potential audience on the system?
Well, then that's what they want to test, which is, again, a smart business. They probably should have done it with a new brand, though, instead of a brand that people invested in on another system. And as far as I know, they haven't announced the first one for the Wii U, so it's like, if you want to play this, you have to play the original on this system and then play the second one on this system.
It kind of sucks that they have to keep the new name as well, because I like the name Stealth Bastard.
Yeah, Stealth Bastard.
Stealth Bastard
funny.
Is awesome, and keep it a Stealth Bastard, please. I mean, it's not that's not going to fly with Nintendo. I mean, if it didn't fly for Sony, it's not going to fly for Nintendo.
I don't know if Nintendo has any type of things on naming your games, but. I mean, they usually are pretty clear with their intentions. As long as it's not religious in tone, they don't care. Which is why you don't see that whatever that game. Anyhow.
Binding of Isaac.
There we go. I just found it a really weird announcement, but the reactions, again, I get why people would be upset with it, but the reactions are so extreme, it's just baffling at times. Yes, I guess kind of sticking with Nintendo, because again, it was a busy week for them. Their smallest announcement, I guess, would be Pokemon Art Academy, which would be
I have
out-
no idea what that is.
It's just Art totally Academy, but Pokemon in it. And
Art Academy teaching you how to draw Pokemon
characters.
Yeah,
okay. And it's just weird that like they just don't make an add-on for Art Academy.
If you could sell it for a full price, why not?
I think Nintendo knows how to sell Pokemon.
Yeah, and they know how to sell Art Academy, so it's the best of both worlds.
Or the worst.
Well, I mean, as far as I know, right now it's only announced for Japan, and I assume the Japanese will eat it up. And they need something to kind of bolster the 3DS over there. It's kind of been on a downward curve for some time. They also, we had new Mario Kart 8 details.
Loads
some
of cool stuff, actually.
Yeah, lots of interesting stuff. I think we had the bundle announcement for North America, which a lot of people aren't happy with.
Why not? I can understand,
because to them, it's not the price that's the problem, and increasing the price of the...
Yeah, I guess so.
I understand that. I would also have said, like, either same price as the normal console, or do it even cheaper.
Yeah, I understand the logic of that, but it's not. It gets the OU one, and you can get it and probably get Mario Kart. Actually, it would probably be wiser to get a Wii bundle, a Wii U bundle separately, and then do Mario Kart because of the other demands, which is the you get a free digital game with the purchase of Mario Kart, both digitally and physically.
Yeah.
For us, it's only four games. It's New Super Mario Bros. U, it's Pikmin 3, it's Wind Waker HD, and it's Wii Party U. For you folks, it's like 10 games.
Because Europe is awesome.
Well, I think part of that is also they published a lot more. Like, they published Sonic Lost World in Europe. I don't think they published it here for us. And stuff like that. But yeah, it's a fantastic way to kind of, like, it's... They want people to buy Mario Kart, and they want people to be invested into their software ecosystem.
Yeah.
It's the best of both worlds. And they don't really lose money on it because it's their games.
Yep.
So yeah, I'm really excited for it. I don't know if I'm getting Pikmin 3 or Wind Waker HD. I'm leaning towards Pikmin 3 because I haven't paid it, but I want Wind Waker HD. I just didn't want to pay for it.
I know a lot of people that are just going to pick Wind Waker.
I've seen a lot of the only one that people seem to really be iffy on is Wii Party.
Earl, let me ask you this. Did you like the previous Pikmin games?
I was so on Pikmin 1, and I've never played Pikmin 2.
Then you should get Wind Waker.
But I feel like it's such a great opportunity to try Pikmin, since it's free. But yeah, like I said, I'm really torn between those two, so we'll see how that goes. They also kind of detailed more of the Mario Kart 8 stuff, the online tournaments, which seems to be the thing that's replacing communities with this game, which still seems kind of novel. Ton of interesting options and stuff like that. It seems like you can't set it up for more than a month or so, but it's still kind of cool. Mario Kart TV, which we kind of knew about, but this is the first time it was detailed.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the fact that you can upload it straight to YouTube. It
seems Nintendo understands the internet! They understand the internet!
But except, there's already some controversy surrounding that, though.
Yes, which I think is stupid, but...
I don't think so.
I do. Like, I understand if it's, like, I understand when people defend it when it's, like, a person who makes their own video and they upload it and stuff like that. But this is you literally taking game footage and uploading it to YouTube. I don't get why you should have to monetize that or want to monetize it. Like, I can see the controversy in that maybe Nintendo shouldn't monetize it. But if they are putting, whatever, the ads in front of these games that come from their system, from their game, I don't see any problem with that.
I think in this case, I would let it slide because you're not putting anything on it yourself.
Yeah,
that makes
yeah
sense.
It's literally just uploading video footage.
Like,
yeah,
Nintendo
but...
Nintendo went to the effort to actually put the feature in the game, you know, and they didn't have to, and you're not adding anything to it, so...
Yeah, like I said, if they do it where like, any Mario Kart 8 video that goes on YouTube gets monetized, then that, I can understand. But if it's just people putting... a video straight, like, oh, I just finished this race, let me upload it, and it's like, I want to charge people to watch this, then it's kind of sketchy. It's, there's like a guy on YouTube who just uploads video game trailers, and he puts ads in front of it, and I've always thought that was sketchy. You're not doing anything. I guess we'll talk about this with the other one, the next thing as well, but I do like what they're doing in Nintendo Directs now, where they're just kind of embracing the fact that they're the really kind of weird uncle in the room.
Yeah, the editing style on the Mario Kart one was very strange, and I kind of liked it.
Yeah, it's like, you know, we're not going to be the cool kids in cast. We're not going to be, you know, the hippest or freshest people. So we're going to go with our sense of, this is your grandpa's type of humor. And it works, because it's general, but it's so out there that it kind of sticks with you. Like, this was kind of like a Channel Surfing thing with different... Mario, it was really weird, but it's like, oh, he said it does get in the way of the information at times because you want to like wire the setup, but it's, you know, like people complain about the fact that Iwata standing in front of a white room just saying, here, some footage was boring, so they're mixing it up. And they did the same thing when they announced their E3 plans the day before with the Mega 64 and Reggie Fiza mech.
Oh, that's great. That video
it was
so good.
Really funny.
And again, it's cheesy, but it worked because it was funny and it was endearing, and it kind of speaks to them as a company that's kind of out there and different at times. Not necessarily what they announced to a lot of people. And they announced that they will not be holding a traditional E3 press conference again this year. Instead, they will be holding a Nintendo Digital event, which just sounds like a fancy way of saying a Nintendo Direct.
Yeah. Kinda?
Yeah, who knows? There might be something...
I think it's probably going to be more like the things that GameSpot and GT do, where they have a guy sitting there and he talks to people every now and then.
Well, I think that's part of they announced they have the Nintendo Treehouse at E3, which is what that sounds like, which is them being, they're basically doing their own coverage for E3 this year.
And that's cool, I think, you know.
They're going to have people on the show floor playing their games, giving impressions, doing live demos, so anything can happen. They also have the Smash Fest, which was very interesting. They have set up their own, I think, 16-person invitational Smash Brothers 4 Wii U tournament. And they are going to live stream that. And it sounds like they are embracing the competitive scene.
Also really cool. It's nice to see Nintendo sort of reaching out to people and saying, you know, come help us promote the game. I mean, it worked for Dota 2 when they held the International for the first time. And it's a really cool way of saying... Here's some pure footage of the game, you know, for people who know how to play it.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to believe it's going to be good, but this is also Nintendo. As much as I love them, I can see them putting something that's going to piss off people somewhere between now and the start of this. Like, it's going, like, you... Like it's, I mean, I hope they do it properly. I hope it's kind of like a huge thing. Like they had that Smash Brothers documentary a couple of years ago where it's like you have the lead up where you kind of get these videos on these people. And it's like the wizard where they've never got to play it before and everybody goes in blind and stuff like that. But I see them being like, oh, we're not going to embrace the competitive spirit. We're going to be like a items all on like a moving stage. And stuff like that. One round.
I doubt that because they already have like this no fun allowed mode in their game.
I'm very curious to see what it is. It's also novel that instead of, because this is where they usually hold their E3 press conference, this is the place, and it's going to be live stream, but it's also going to have a live audience as well. So I'm really curious to see how that goes. And I do hope they do something with it, because like you said, it's great marketing for people online, but I also think it would be great if you kind of splice this up and actually use, like, movie, if you ever see, like, movie commercials where, like, people come out of a movie and give me first impressions.
I always think that's the dumbest thing.
Oh, I think it's terrible, especially with horror films. But you remember those commercials because of those people's reaction being terrible. Like, oh my god! Hey, how did you watch? But it sticks with you.
Does it?
It does.
Does it?
especially the ones, because you can't get actual footage of a person in a movie theater because of the lighting. So it's usually somebody with like a green lighting filter, and their face, you always see their eyes, and it's really stupid, and then they come out of the theater and like, oh my gosh, it's like the best movie ever. And it's like the scariest thing I've seen ever, and it's like really dumb. And I've never been on a commercial for this, but I've had this happen to me during movie premieres and stuff like that, where they'll ask you your opinions after you come out, and you get to sign waivers, but I don't react to that, so I've never been on TV, lucky enough. And they also announced, and this is more for me than you, they also announced that Smash Brothers will be playable in Best Buy again this year. Well, they will have playable Smash Brothers at Best Buy, similar to what they did last year with Mario Kart and Super Mario 3D World.
It's a cool idea. It's nice to see them keeping it going.
I think, I mean, I said this before, selfishly, I prefer it much, like, I assume it's a very comparable price. I prefer it personally because I enjoy watching the press conferences, but I'd much rather people just say, you can go try out our games right now. And, you know, I don't have to worry like the rest of the country. It's not like, oh, it's going to be a Best Buy near me. Is it going to be a Best Buy near me? It's like, yeah, it's going to be at the Nintendo World Store. I know that much. And it's not going to be like from 8 to 12. It's going to be all day. So I don't have to worry about any of that nonsense. So selfishly, it's perfect for me. Yeah. Did they do anything like that for Europe last year? Or did
you
focus? Okay. I don't know. But yeah. Video was really funny. Already tons of GIFs from it, which is not going to get annoying by E3 time. So yes, there's that. And I guess... Oh, I skipped over the big one, but we'll go to Destiny next, which they had a new gameplay trailer of. An actual gameplay trailer, not like a very fancy CG trailer game companies.
Yeah, I was really impressed when it said gameplay trailer and it was actually gameplay.
Bungie tend to be really good with gameplay trailers anyway.
I think the same day a Madden teaser came out and EA's like, this is in-game assets. I'm like, I don't care.
Exactly.
Yeah, Bungie tends to be really good. They tend to have a similar sort of promotion like schedule where they have a couple of, like when they announce the game, they have a couple of sort of behind the scenes videos where you get to see just a little bit, and they have like a cinematic trailer, and then eventually they have like a really big gameplay trailer.
Yeah, and this was the gameplay trailer, and the game looks fantastic, I think. Well, I mean, not that graphically, but I think it just looks like a ton of fun. And that's not to say it looks ugly.
I think it looks graphically great as well.
Yeah, I was going to say it doesn't mean it looks ugly. I just meant, like, what I meant was specifically, I enjoyed what I saw with the gameplay. It's really fun.
And some people have been complaining, like... Oh man, these enemies look super dumb, it was so easy to kill them, what happened to the Halo AI? Both people apparently didn't pay attention when Bungie said like this war that basically the characters they used to make this view were totally overleveled for this.
You could tell because they got hit, and they got hit, and they got hit, and they got hit over and over and over again, you know.
Yeah.
You are asking the internet to read and be logical about something instead of reacting from the heart.
Yeah,
which doesn't happen often. Yes, we got word of the beta as well, which I think we talked about last week, where you could just literally just go on the website, pre-order from Amazon, get the code, and cancel the Amazon pre-order.
Yeah.
And I think they said they're going to give more details about the beta at E3 and also show for your combat.
Yeah. I assume we will get a date for the beta at E3.
Right. It has to be, because the game's out in September. It's not much time after. It's, what, 5 months?
Probably, like, July would make sense, I guess.
I would actually, I would do it right after E3. There's not a ton coming
out in that
June.
Would be even better. I mean, the sooner I get to play it, the more happy I am, but...
Yeah. Yeah, I can't wait. The only thing I'm kind of down on, and I'm sure there's ways, is like it seems like you're limited to 3-man squads.
I like it.
It's easier
to get 3 people together than 4?
I guess because I'm used to playing with 4 friends every week, so it's kind of like one guy's going to be the odd man out. We're going to have to find 2 other people so that we can have 2 3-man squads.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's just weird. I know. It's just that we're so accustomed to 4 people co-op in like Left 4 Dead and Halo, and I guess Gears of War, you added 4 with the last game. Well, I don't even know about Judgment, but that's when they counted and stuff like that.
Interesting, though, that they also have this three-player structure for competitive play.
Yeah.
That sounds interesting. I'm really can't wait to see that, and apparently they will show off a competitive at E3. So.
Yeah, they're going to show off a lot of stuff at E3, but they're getting it. They're just building hype, because it does seem to be a really interesting and novel game.
I also watched this video of someone, there are some YouTube guys that basically put together all the information for Destiny, because Bungie is apparently not the greatest at, like, really focusing the information stream, I guess, and there was, like, interesting stuff that they have, like, a huge team that is going to work on daily content for this game when it's out, which is... pretty insane if you think about it.
Well, yeah, but we mentioned this earlier with the Activision talk. It's like one of the beauties of their. It's like they aren't obligated to make turn out any sequels right now, at least. So like you have this entire team, so you can have people dedicated to just doing new content for this game.
Yeah.
And to be fair, Bungie has always been really great at post-game content with even the Halo, well, I guess the Halo franchise. But, I mean, they gave you DLC, but they also gave you a ton of free stuff and new game modes they would introduce almost constantly for free.
Yeah.
So they've always been pretty good with that.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And I guess the last bit of news for this week is Disney Infinity Marvel Superhero, because
which
that is
pretty much called.
Oh, I mean, to be fair, they already teased it, so it wasn't too much of a shock when it came out.
Yeah.
It was, I am surprised at that. I mean, I guess it makes sense because Disney owns them, that they're focused on the Avengers, and they're downplaying people like Spider-Man. Because Spider-Man was at the press conference, but he's not even in the trailer that they released.
He is in the trailer. He's
okay, so there's a second trailer. Because the first trailer they released didn't have him. It was just like the Avengers stuff, the gameplay.
No, he's in that trailer. He's shortly, there is like an explosion and he comes through the,
okay, because they released, cause
stuff,
they
through
released,
smoke.
They released one right after, which is about a minute, which was just like the gameplay stuff.
Okay, then it's probably the one that I saw is a bit longer than a minute, I think.
Yeah, I think there might have been a second one. I didn't check that out. It's focused on the Avengers. Did they say who's in the starter pack?
Yeah, Thor, Iron Man, and Black Widow.
Oh, okay. So,
interesting combination, I think.
Yeah, I thought they would have gone. I mean, I guess popularity wise, I would have gone with Captain America. I mean, wow. Yeah, I guess Captain America would be up there now, but I would have went with Iron Man, Hulk, and Captain America.
Yeah.
Because
of personal preference, I would have liked that.
I guess the idea is, though, that you don't put your most popular ones in the starter pack, so people buy the starter pack and then buy more.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I get that as well. It's just. Because, I mean, I don't want to say this, so it's going to sound sexist, but how many people are going to buy a Black Widow toy?
Well, it's mainly because Black Widow is not that popular amongst the fans.
Well, she's not that popular amongst them, but she's also not a hidden lady. She's been a side character in all of the movies, I should say. So, I guess it makes sense that she's the addition to this starter pack.
Yeah.
And we mentioned last week, they didn't go with the superhero squad look, but they do have a very stylized look for the toys and for the game, and it works for the most part. I think Hulk looks really weird with his proportions, but
like Hulk.
I did not like Hulk.
I think the figure looks really cool. I'm basically almost committed to getting this game at this point.
Oh, well, that makes one of us. I am not basically committed to getting this game.
Because I like the figures.
Surprise.
I'm a sucker for stuff like this, so I'm probably going to get this.
Yeah, I'm just going to wait for it to be maybe $50 and not like $75 or whatever they charge.
I have no idea what they charge.
I think it was $75 for the first one.
Huh.
But I'm pretty much... like I said, I'm not... Pretty much, I am committed to getting this. I have superheroes. I have action figures. It is going to be a disaster on my wallet. It's a good thing this is Marvel, not DC, or you probably won't see me anymore. The site would close down because I'd invest all my money into those toys.
Like I said before, when the original Disney Infinity came out, I liked the idea of this toy box thing where you can build your own stuff. I think that's cool.
And it's nice to see. I mean, I've only seen Aaron Signal's video on Disney Infinity, but it's nice to see that they're addressing most of the criticisms, at least he had, which is to say that if you try and make a game in there, there's no win states. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah. So it's cool to see that they're actually listening. And the fact that they hired somebody who makes the levels to make levels is really cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
That's true. And also found it interesting that apparently Brian Michael Bendis, one of the comic writers over at Marvel, is also involved with this to write apparently the story for Ford and be in charge of getting the characters right, which I thought
which
was...
Which is awesome if you want to see the story end in Disney Infinity 5.1. I fry Michael Bendis, but if anybody can decompress a story to take forever, it's him.
That's true, but still, I think it's kind of cool that he's involved.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, like, he is kind of one of the modern architects of Marvel, to steal their term.
Yep.
Especially when you talk about the Ultimate Universe and stuff like that. So that's kind of novel, and they are treating this as, you know, like, it's, I don't think it's going to be as well received by gamers as something like Batman Arkham games were, but it is a serious effort in that, you know, they are doing something with the license and they're doing something cool. It's really funny how DC and Marvel has switched sides in the public's eye. Because, you know, like, DC used to be the campy company and Marvel was the ones with the serious characters and the serious stories. And their movies and games are really goofy and comical, where DC kind of has that dark, gritty realism. And I mean, granted, part of it is because their most popular character is Spider-Man and DC's is Batman and kind of affects their universe, but it is funny that you get the Arkham games into these dark, serious games, and you get this Marvel Disney Infinity game, and it's like goofy and childish and fun and toys. But yeah,
the cool thing is with this is also that basically Disney Infinity is now the movie tie-in games.
Yeah, yeah, pretty. Like I said, they're focusing on the Avengers. They also show Guardians of the Galaxy toys, and
they didn't show the toys, but in the teaser there was Groot and Rocket Raccoon. Yeah, there also were some villains in there: Green Goblin, MODOK of all villains.
Well, I think MODOK works well for this type of game.
Oh, I like MODOK. I think it's cool that they have MODOK in there, but. I mean, the general public probably has no clue who MODOK is.
I wouldn't if it wasn't for Lego Marvel, to be honest.
Yeah, MODOK is an awesome. I think he's the. I think outside of maybe arcade, he's probably the perfect villain for a video game.
Yeah.
So yes, I can't wait for that, and that is out this fall sometime. They didn't give a date, but I assume since Skylanders is October, this might aim for September.
Yeah, I think I heard September, but I'm not sure.
I don't think, and this is out on, I think, almost every major platform.
Except 3DS.
And Vita.
And Vita, yeah, right.
Basically, it's not on handheld, yes, you have a mobile device.
They made a 3DS game for the first game, but apparently that was kind of crappy. It was kind of, what I've heard, was like a Mario Party thing.
Yeah,
only?
Yeah. I think the problem is just inherently like toys sound awesome, but nobody wants to carry them around.
Yeah, that as well. And you would also basically have to do the same game on these handhelds, otherwise people don't care.
Yeah, and the other thing, this more with the 3DS and the Vita, is just that. Well, I mean, I guess it's easy, but you know, there aren't a ton of games on the 3DS with like DLC or additional content, so it's probably not something they wanted to invest in too much, so it's not much of an audience being built for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yes, it is out on the PS4, the Xbox One, the 360, the PS3, the Wii U, PC, Android, iOS, and almost everything is forward compatible, so anything from Disney Infinity 1 can be used with Disney Infinity 2. I believe they even said that you can use the PS3 portal with the PS4 version.
Yeah, they did say that. And
I don't
think
know.
That's pretty cool.
I don't know if that's the same thing with the 360 to Xbox One versions, though.
I mean, if it's like, I mean, on the Xbox 360, it's also basically just a USB port, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that doesn't stop Microsoft, does it?
Yeah, that's true. Still not work, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, here's that. Like I said, we're looking forward to it. And honestly, I don't even need more details on this game, so. So that will do it for this week in news. And with the, I guess, 10 minutes we have left or so, we're going to do some brief impressions. Martin?
Yeah. What I've played most is a whole bunch of Mario Golf. So I got the game after all, and I think it's really fucking good. I mean, the gameplay already before was, it's simple, it's easy to learn, but you can just do a lot with giving the ball spin, and the courses are all pretty well designed, and there's actually a decent amount of challenge in the CPU. Also really like the challenges, they are really nice change of pace, And they unlock a bunch of stuff. The game has a lot of stuff to unlock, which is also pretty cool. And also really fan of the online tournaments. I think that's a big part of this game. Where you can basically take part in like official tournaments for Nintendo. You can repeat the tournaments as often as you like to improve your position. And what I think is interesting is that the official Nintendo tournaments, just if you take part in them, you basically always get some new equipment for your Mii golfer, which is pretty cool, even if you're not good. And if you win the tournament, you get a whole bunch of gold, so you can buy other equipment for your Mii. And you can also create your own tournaments. It has also the community feature, which Mario Kart 7 has. So you can, like, if you're a forum member, for example, you can have, like, this forum do, like, a community, so you can only play with people from this forum or something like that. All this works really well. What I was really impressed with during the tournaments is that it's you basically doing a synchronous play. So when you start golfing, you just see, even before you even shoot your own ball, you just see balls flying ahead with like small bubbles next to them showing the me character of the person who did that shot. So you always see like different shots from other people happening. And at the end of the tournament, you can upload your own ghost so people can see your shots when they are playing. And I think that was a pretty cool feature when you played these asynchronous tournaments. So it's not just you playing alone. I was actually so impressed with the package that I even got the season pass.
Oh no.
It's the first season pass I ever bought.
You're contributing towards the death of Nintendo, how dare you?
I mean, it basically doubles the content of this game, so I thought, like, okay, I want even more golf. And I already have, like, two extra 18-hole courses from day one, so I have no idea when I stop playing this game. Might be a while.
Who comes? Is it Gold Mario that comes with the first DLC pack?
Gold Mario and Toadette.
Does Gold Mario break the game? Because
it gives, I have no gold idea. I've not tried Gold Mario at this point.
Because gold is a currency in the game, right? And he gets gold for every yard he hits the ball.
Yeah, but that's an item you have to activate.
Oh, okay.
It's an item. I think he just comes with items right at the start. Might do make some of the challenges easier, but it's definitely not going to break the game, especially not if you just don't play the coin mode, then his ability doesn't do anything.
Okay. So yeah.
You can, when you create tournaments, you can block certain characters. So
yeah, I saw that.
Tournaments have like, okay, you can only do them with your Mii.
Somebody blocked out Luigi. That was so sad. Like, everybody else put Luigi.
It's not his year anymore. No.
I know, so mean that they put that in a Mario Kart 8 video. I guess it's official that Luigi is over. Like, why? Oh my gosh.
Wait, I should do that.
I was awesome. So do you think you got your bang for your buck without the season pass, or does it?
Oh yeah,
like,
definitely. Even without the season pass, there's a lot of stuff. I just felt like I can play this for even longer, so why not get the more courses right off the bat? That's why I bought it. And also, it was cheaper if you buy it right away.
So the way you buy the season pass, because this is confusing, because...
Yeah,
I know that the DLC system on the 3DS is not the best thing in the world.
Yeah.
So, I'm assuming that when the season... Is the season pass like a separate item, or...?
No, you buy it in the game.
That's really strange.
You buy it in the game.
That's how they handle all of their DLC. That's what they did with New Super Luigi U as well.
No, I know that. I mean, like, when you... Because in the games, to buy DLC, you click a button and it opens their sort of in-app purchase kind of thing. Yeah, is it like a separate item there?
What do you mean a separate item?
Oh, okay. Like, is it season pass, DLC 1, DLC 2?
No, the game actually has a menu which is built into the game.
That's really weird.
It says, like, buy all courses, buy just this pack, or this pack.
Oh,
which
I see.
Not the shop interface. It's the interface they actually built into the game.
Yeah, that's
and how then works. when you pick something, then it brings up this in-app purchase interface.
That's how the Pokemon Bank subscription purchasing is handled. It's clearly Nintendo retrofitting a system for something it wasn't designed for.
Well, like I said, it's the same thing on the Wii U. Like, you can, I assume you can probably, but like, DLC is downloaded through the game.
And on the Wii U, usually the DLC items are also in the eShop. You can just go into the eShop.
On the 3DS, there's two ways of getting DLC. You can either click a button and it opens a sort of a mini store, which is how it handles the extra Street Mi Plaza games and Phoenix Wright. Dual Destinies handles DLC that way. Or there's an in-game thing, which is how Fire Emblem handles the DLC, as far as I remember, and obviously Mario Golf does it that way as well.
Yeah.
It's really strange. Buying DLC on the 3DS is the strangest thing.
I feel like they do that. They probably do that because they want to put in as many safeguards as possible. Mm-hmm. Like, buying anything from them, it's like you have to confirm it like 50 times to make sure. And I guess they just don't want kids, you know, like how sometimes you hear stories of like kids on iPhones or something, and they just rack up charges because there's no safeguard between that. And also, I think the 3DS wasn't designed with that in mind, because even with their first DLC game was, what, 2 years after the system came out?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
The first one was it not New Super Mario Bros. 2?
Oh, yeah, it might be the case, yeah.
Yeah, so I honestly don't get. I think it was a business model they probably didn't think they would invest in, but
yeah, it wasn't a huge problem here. It worked flawlessly. I downloaded the first two courses right away. It seems like, and I'm sure. Maybe I already downloaded all the courses and it just unlocks over time. I'm not sure. It didn't really say. But yeah. Also, you could test drive one of the new pack courses from the first pack, which was also pretty good.
I also think that's a great idea, and I think you can also use, like, if somebody uses it in an online tournament, you can partake in that as well.
Oh yeah, there was an online tournament for one of the test courses, yeah.
Yeah, which is awesome. Yeah. Speaking of downloadable content, you also checked out Child of Light.
Yeah, the demo at least. Because everyone, a lot of people at least, have been gushing about this game and how beautiful it looks. So it didn't really never strike me as anything special at first, except for the look. So I thought, let's give at least the demo a shot. By the way, weird thing, Sony apparently didn't put the demo on the European stores. I don't know why.
It doesn't surprise me. Sony of Europe are fucking useless, they are.
I don't know, that's true. I see your PlayStation Plus sign up and I cry.
Anyway, used my US account to download the demo. That worked flawlessly. And first thing, of course, when I started playing it, it looks really nice. It uses the UB Art Engine, which also powers the current Rayman games. So it is real nice 2D art. Beautifully done. But when it comes to the gameplay, I felt like it was kind of uninteresting. I mean, it's an RPG, but it's very simple. I mean, you just go through 2D planes, which are the levels. Yeah, it's not really levels. It's just phase levels. You go through them, they are 2D planes. You can go around enemies, that's a possibility. Or if you just go into them, you start to fight. Classic RPG stuff. So, and then the battle system is very much reminiscent of the Grandia games. So they are on this timeline, and every enemy and your own characters are on this timeline, and if you reach like the point on which you can take an action, you can pick an action. Every action takes a certain amount of time, so that affects then how you end up on the timeline on your next turn, basically. So that's something to keep in mind. But I thought, like, on the normal difficulty, it's really, really easy. I mean, I didn't really have to think about what I was doing. And also for, like, the options you have are also not really varied. My option was, like, attack, defend, do a special attack, which was not available for my main character, and which was for the other character a couple of magic attacks, and both were just elemental attacks. And then use an item. And that's it. I didn't really think, like, it was interesting. After, like, 5 fights, I was like, yeah, I get it, but it's not really interesting for modern standards. Also, I was really... When I found out that, apparently, you started the demo with, on, like, level, I'm not sure, 4 or 5 or something, and they didn't put any skill points in the skills. So I looked at the skill tree and realized very quickly that I have no idea why they made skill tree, because basically the tree is like separated into 3 parts. So one was more like offensive, one was more like spell based, and one was had affected more your basic attack abilities. But those things that are affected are just a few of points in there. So when I started going into one of those trees, it was like, put 1 point in here, you attack stronger. Put 1 point in here, you have more life. Put 1 point in here, you are stronger. And when I say put 1 point in here, I meant this tree, because this tree didn't, at least in the beginning, didn't have any way to branch. It was just point after point after point to point to put in. And I didn't really have to think about it. I was like, okay, this is my attacking character, so XXXXX, all those... I didn't really need this tree system, and if that's all you're doing, they could just do a progression system by, okay, you level up, and we do points automatically, or we just give you a new ability when you have reached this level or something. This tree system kind of seemed superfluous. Putting the game on hard makes it a bit more of a challenge, but if you have any kind of experience with RPGs or JRPGs, let's say, it's even then it's not that hard or interesting, to be honest. I'd rather play Grandia again. Let's say it this way.
Well, I still want to check it out, because, like you said, a lot of people have been really impressed with it, and a lot of people who's have been very, very proud of the game. They've been really out about how good it is. So I've been curious. It looks interesting, but I've heard, you know, a lot of reviewers mentioned that it's kind of a really easy thing, that a lot of the systems aren't in place unless you're at the highest difficulty or something like that.
You don't need to use all the system on the except if you're playing on the highest difficulty, basically.
Which is a weird conceit, I guess, to say we have these in place, but we don't need to use them unless you want a challenge.
Yeah. Well, the systems are there if you play on the lower difficulty. Just the challenge isn't there that you even have to think about using them.
Oh.
That's the whole problem. You can just mesh on letting them attack, and that's it. I don't think that's particularly interesting for more than 10 fights.
Okay.
I would rather play Grandia again, or if they do another game like that, maybe make the combat system a bit more involved, and maybe don't do a skill tree. Also, the way the people talk in this game is totally annoying, because it's all in rhymes, and sometimes that's just, no, not fun to read for a while.
Rhymes are awesome.
See, I can imagine, like, it being kind of neat if one character did it, but all of them?
Yeah.
Mm.
To be fair, that had to be tough to write.
Yeah, well...
Yeah, but some of the rhymes are not... Good.
From what I know, that they sort of the text kind of deviates a little bit just so they can get a rhyme in. So, I don't know.
I also read for some of the rhymes are just not good, and I also saw some examples of rhymes that are not actually rhymes, but they thought apparently they were rhymes.
Good.
So, yeah.
That must be even worse to localize.
I have no idea if that's in English.
I was going to say, I assume that it was done in English. They probably have subtitles elsewhere.
Well, it doesn't have voice. It's just text.
Oh, so maybe they just assume everybody's going to read it in English.
It's a Ubisoft game. They usually do e-fix. So.
And I have no idea how you're going to localize writing.
It's probably a pain in the ass.
Probably.
Like, okay, I could understand localizing rhymes, but even even sometimes when you directly translate something, it doesn't make sense, and then trying to get it to rhyme and make the same amount of sense it makes in another language just seems like an impossible task.
Yeah, I do not envy the localizers of this game.
Okay, so anything else before we begin to wrap?
Tap and Go on the 3DS is cheap, right? And it's...
I don't know, is it? Tell me, Daniel.
Yeah, it's cheap, right? There's a sale on it, it's like 30% off, but it's cheap. It's like $2, right? If you like puzzle games, just buy it. I'm not going to explain what it is. The game would have explained better than I can, but it's a cheap puzzle game. There's like 100 or so puzzles, and each of them take 2 minutes to do. It's kind of cool. You should check it out.
Okay. As for... Well, I haven't been playing anything, so I'll just do our notes. As always, we will start our pre-E3 round of podcasts next week with third parties. And then I believe the order should be Microsoft, Sony, Nintendo. We always do it in the order of everybody's kind of events or press conference. And then I think the last one is just a general pre-E3 thing where we recap everything and do our own predictions and updates on news and stuff like that. So that will be starting next week. The website has, you know, you can check out this podcast, of course, every week. We have Nerds on the Rocks every week. Our comic reviews go up on a weekly basis. We're getting more game content. I should technically have a review up of a mobile game sometime this week if I get around to finishing that. We have Kaiji Commentary, which is a look at monster movies. We've been focusing on Godzilla. We are actually, as of this, it probably doesn't matter, but we are closing on the Facebook page. It made no sense to have two, especially since I didn't update that one that often. So from now on, if you ever want to like us or follow along, you can check us out at Nerds on the Rocks on Facebook. We're still dual wielding on Twitter and Nerds on the Rocks on Google Plus, which doesn't matter what you're using that for because nobody uses Google Plus for anything. So,
that's
yes, did that. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher. Leave reviews because, you know, reviews help people get views. And that's a terrible rhyme. I'm working for Ubisoft now. Our Twitter names are always on the show notes, partially because I really just don't want to say them and remember them every week. But there you go. For Daniel, Martin, and myself, this has been Dual Wielden Episode 140.
And fuck Mario. He always beats me on this fucking course.